Sunday, Narantara gave the Sunday feast lecture, and he mentioned that this was a bona fide mantra for worshiping Lord Ramachandra. So we'll chant this in place of Jai Rai Lamadava. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshaman. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam. So, as we can see here, this is from the Chaitanya Charanamrita, Madhulila. And this is the mantra that Lord Chaitanya used to chant as he was walking along the road in the morning, traveling from one place to the other. And the line there, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava Rakshamam, means praying to Lord Ram, please protect us. So anyway, so now we're going to chant something. Our shloka will be from the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 39, I believe. Let's see. Yeah, 539, Brahma Samhita. Okay, 39, you're getting close. There you go. Okay, so I chose this because this Lord Ramachandra is mentioned in here. Also, Prabhupada gave two classes on the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, one in Hawaii on March 27, 1969, and the other in Mumbai, 1974. The one in Mumbai, he really didn't say anything about Lord Ramachandra. He just mentioned today's Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, but this one in Hawaii, Prabhupada elaborated, and he actually talked a lot about Lord Ramachandra, described his life story. So a lot of the class will be based on that, the lecture that Prabhupada gave in Hawaii, 1969, on Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, when he actually, spoke about him and sort of narrated the story. And this was the verse he started off. He started off the lecture by quoting this verse. So we could do it just like we do at the beginning of Bhagavatam class. I'll chant a line and everybody else can chant in response, and we'll do it a few times. Ramadi Mortishu Kalani Amena Tishtan Nanavatara Makaro Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramapumanyo Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Ramadi Murti Shukalani Amena Tishtan Nan Avatara Makaro Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramapamanyo Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Okay, one final time. Ramadi Morteshu Kalani Amena Tishtan. Nan Avataram Akaro Bhuvaneshu Kintu. Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramapamanyo. Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Nana Vatana Makara Bhuvanesha Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramahamanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Very good. Okay, word for word. Rama Adi, the incarnation of Lord Ram, etc. Murtishu, in different forms. Kalani Amena, by the order of plenary portions. Tishtan, existing. Nana, various. Avataram, incarnations. Akarod, executed. Bhuvaneshu, within the worlds. Kintu, but. Krishna, Lord Krishna. Swayam, personally. Samabhavat, appeared. Paramaha, the supreme. Puman, person. Ya, who? Govindam, Govinda. Adipurusham, the original. Translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who manifested himself personally as Krishna and the different avatars in the world in the forms of Ram, Narsimha, Bhamana, etc., as his subjective portions. So that's from the Brahma Samhita. And I'm not going to read the purport to that, because it's a little different. But Prabhupada sort of gave a purport to that verse in his lecture. And some of the points he made about that verse is that there are innumerable incarnations of Krishna. They're like, he used the metaphor of like waves on a river. You know, you can't count how many waves there are on the river. He did mention that among them, Ram is one of the principal avatars or incarnations of Krishna. And that's why he's mentioned specifically in that verse. But when we were doing the translation, you notice I said, etc., even, because it says Ram Adi, which means beginning with Ram, but there's innumerable. But Ram is the principal one. So Prabhupada, in his lecture, he mentioned that he gave as a date for the appearance of Lord Ramachandra, he said, a bit over 2 million years ago. That's the date Prabhupada gave. And analyzed it, he said that Lord Ramachandra appeared sometime in the beginning of the Treta Yuga, around that period. And in this round of millenniums, you know, generally the order is Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, Kali. But in this particular millennium or round of millennium ages that we're in, the Treta and the Dwarpa got flipped around. So in the Dwarpa was the one before Kali, and that lasts for 800,000 years. And before that is Treta Yuga. That lasted for 1,200,000 years. So, as I said, Prabhupada gave the date approximately 2 million years ago for the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. And the details of his life are in a book, Vedic literature, called Ramayana, which I'm sure we've all heard of. And it's mentioned there that he took birth in a place called Ayodhya, which is in northern India, and it's about 500 miles northeast of Delhi. And it's also a dam, Ayodhya Dam. And he took birth on the ninth day of the waxing moon. So Nomi refers to that nine. So before I kind of get into some of the details about his life, I'm going to read something from a book that was written by Sariputta Prabhu, where he talks about the plot. It's a subsection of a chapter. It's titled The Plot of the Ramayana. And it gives us like an overview of the reasons why, the specific reasons why Lord Ramachandra appeared. And it's interesting. He does a good job. It's very interesting. So I'll read this. It says, the basic plot of the Ramayana is that a powerful being named Ravana had taken over a region called Lanka on the surface of this earth. And from that base of operations, he was causing considerable trouble to many different groups of beings. For this reason, a group of devas, gandharvas, and sages who were concerned with affairs on the earth gathered together and made the following appeal to Lord Brahma. O blessed Lord, having been favored by thee, the Rakshasa Ravana perpetually troubles us since thou hast granted a boon to him. And we are helpless and forced to endure his fearful oppression. The Lord of the Rakshasas has inspired terror in the three worlds, and having overthrown the guardians of the earth, he has even humbled Indra himself. Provoking the sages, the Yakshas, Gandharvas, Brahmanas, and other beings, he tramples them underfoot. He who has become insufferable through pride, being under thy protection. Okay? So that's the demigod speaking to Lord Brahma. And it goes on to say here. So this is Lord Brahma's response. He says, here is a way of bringing about the end of that perverse being. Quote, may I not be destroyed by Gandharvas. This is what Ravana requested. May I not be destroyed by Gandharvas, Yakshas, gods, and Rakshasas, was Ravana's request. But thinking man to be of no account, he did not ask to be made invulnerable in regard to him. Therefore, none but man can destroy him. Now, this is Sariputta's comment about this. Ravana thought that human beings were completely insignificant, and this gives us another clue as to why he did not particularly concern himself with them. But this turned out to be his downfall. Following the advice of Brahma, the assembled celestial beings asked Lord Vishnu to incarnate on earth as an apparent human being to slay Ravana. Lord Vishnu agreed and took his birth as Ram, the son of King Dasarath of Ayodhya. In due course of time, Ravana learned about the beauty of Sita, the wife of Ram, and he devised a plan to abduct her. This created a conflict between Ravana and Ram, and eventually Ram slew him and with celestial weapons in a great battle. And here's an interesting point now coming up. It says, this brings up another point concerning human beings. From the point of view of celestial beings such as Ravana, humans are utterly inferior and unimportant. Why then did Lord Vishnu, the original source of Brahma and all the devas, agree to live among them as one of them? The answer is that according to Vedic literature, the human form of life is uniquely advantageous for making spiritual advancement. Subhuman forms of life lack the intelligence required for spiritual contemplation, and superhuman beings tend to become wrapped up in the enjoyment of great power, beauty, and longevity. But the human form, with all its trials and tribulations, provides a gateway through which the soul can readily ascend to higher spiritual stages. Since the primary concern of Lord Vishnu is with the destiny of the soul, it was natural for him to be concerned with the human race. So that's kind of a nice explanation of why Lord Ramachandra appeared here on Earth. So now getting back to the lecture that Prabhupada gave and giving some details about his life. So one very significant turn of events in the life of Lord Ramachandra took place when he was just young adulthood. You know, he was just about getting ready to be coronated. You know, his father, Maharaj Dasarath, was older. He had two wives, Maharaj Dasarath, Kausalya and Kekayi. And so they were co-wives. Kausalya was older, and Kekayi was younger. It wasn't like Kausalya was out of favor, like, you know, in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. Suniti and Suruchi. So Suniti was kind of out of favor, you know, with Maharaj Uttanapada. But this wasn't the case. This is not specifically stated. This was the case with Lord Ramachandra. She was just the older wife, and the younger wife was KK. So they had he had four sons, Ram, Lakshman, Shatrughna, and Bharat. Right. So definitely Ram was the son of Kausalya. So anyway, what happened was, at some point, this Maharaj Dasarath, he had a disease. It's called Whitlow. Prabhupada mentions it in the lecture. It's like a virus. and it generally affects a person's fingers. It's like a virus that kind of sets in between the fingernail and the skin. So it was very painful, and he was suffering from that. So KK, the younger of the two wives, she was taking care of him, helping him while he was afflicted by this disease, and he was very pleased. She did a good job of looking after him. So he was very satisfied, and he offered her a boon. He said, thank you. I'm really pleased by the way you've taken care of me and helped me through this. I'd like to offer you a boon. And she said, okay, yeah, thank you very much, but I won't ask right now. I will, at the right time. When I need it, I'll ask for it. So he said, okay, that sounds reasonable enough. So, that was that. So some time passed, and then what happened was, as I mentioned, Lord Ramachandra, Dasharatha wanted to retire. He was old. He wanted to retire. And Lord Ramachandra was the oldest son. So that's the way it worked, that the oldest son, would become the next emperor or the next king. So he was meant to be coronated. And it was like everything was set in place. Actually, it was supposed to happen the next day. he was supposed to be coronated the next day. The people, he was no like stranger. Everybody loved him already in the kingdom. His fame and glory was spread throughout the kingdom. They were making all sorts of preparations to install Ram as the next emperor the next day. They were decorating the entire city. They're going to have a big festival. It's going to be a big celebration. And everybody was kind of all, ready for it, making arrangements. And okay. So what happened, though, was that KK, she had a maid servant. Her name was Mantara, like that. Am I pronouncing it correctly? And this lady was a little bit wicked, evil-minded. So she got in the ear of KK, and she started, poisoning her mind, feeding her with thoughts like, you know what's going to happen, right? If Ram gets coronated as king, your son's just going to be nothing. He's going to be, and you're going to be nothing. And of course, Mantara was thinking, I'm going to be nothing, And that's really where she was coming from. So she poisoned Kikei's mind. She got Kikei to think that, yeah, she's right. She's making some sense. If Ram gets coronated king, what's going to happen to my son? What's going to happen to me, Anyway, it was unfortunate. But this lady was successful. So Kikei, one day before Ram was meant to be coronated, comes to Maharaj Dasarath and says, hey, you remember, you offered me that boon, right? And you said I could take it when I wanted it. And he said, yeah. I said, what would you like? What is it? She said, well, I would like that my son, Bart, become coronated as the emperor instead of Ram, and that Ram has to go out to the forest for 14 years. And Prabhupada comments in the lecture that same, he said, the human, how do you refer to it? Human psychology is the same. she's a politician. She thought that, okay, it's not enough that her son gets coronated, because if he gets coronated, well, the very next day Ram could kind of rock in with all his armies and just, do a coup, take over. So she, just to be on, to protect against that, she made that stipulation that Ram has to go out to the forest for 14 years. So Dasarath, his response was, in Prabhupada's words, he says, it is a big demand. That's how Prabhupada referred to it. It is a big demand. But he agreed. Maharaj Dasarath agreed that, okay, this will happen. Because he is, he was a Kshatriya. And one of the things that Kshatriyas like have like a word of honor. If a Kshatriya gives his word, that's supposed to be binding. Like they never refuse a fight. If somebody challenges a Kshatriya, they'll always fight. They're always, they're very charitable. There's just certain qualities that a Kshatriya is meant to always live by, and that was one of them. But anyway, so he gave his word that, that would happen. So then he called Ram. And he told Ram, okay, your younger mother is making this request, and I made this promise to her that, I offered her a boon, and she's asked, this is her request, so we have to, I have to ask you to do that. And Ramachandra's response was, yeah, okay, no problem. I'm ready to go. You know, he exhibited two things. He exhibited two very amazing qualities. One is, the great virtue of being very obedient to his father. He was like an ideal son. He was prepared to honor his father's requests to the point of renouncing, which is the second quality. He exhibited renunciation. He renounced the whole kingdom. He was the next day, he was meant to be coronated as the emperor. And there he is, just on the request of his father, you know, obediently agreeing, okay, yeah, sure, if you need me to go out to the forest, I'll do that. So that was it. He agreed to do it. Dasarath wasn't happy about that. You know, he was heartbroken. And as a matter of fact, when Ram left for the forest, Dasarath passed away out of heartbreak. He just was so unhappy about having to do that 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 was it. He just left his body. Anyway, so Ram agreed. And so the word got out that that's what was going to happen. So he was approached by Lakshman, his brother. And Lakshman said, I heard you going out to the forest. You're not going to get coronated. You're going to go to the forest. And he said, yeah, that's right. Well, I want to come with you. And Ram said, no. He said, no, that's what I want to do. He said, well, okay, if that's your choice, you know, if that's what you want to do, okay. So Ram agreed that Lakshman could, you know, go out to the forest with him. And then Sita approached him, and she said, I want to go out to the forest. And Ram tried to discourage her. You know, explain, no, it's not a forest, is not a place for a young woman. You know, it's very difficult out there. It's difficult to live out there, and it's dangerous. You know, Ram was actually already at that point when she was, even when she was asking, he was anticipating, no, something could go wrong. You know, aside from it being very uncomfortable, it's a dangerous place. There are rakshasas and demons and so forth. You know, you could be kidnapped or something like that. So, but she insisted. You know, she said, no, it's my duty as your wife to accompany you wherever you go. And if you go to hell, I'm prepared to go to hell with you. So, you know, he could understand, yeah, she was mentioning it was her duty, but it was also a lot of love there. So he complied. He said, okay, you can come. So they went. You know, Ram, Lakshman, and Sita went out to the forest. And so sure enough, what Ram expected or was concerned might happen. You know, Ravana caught wind of they were out there, and he knew how beautiful Sita was, and he made a plan, you know, to trick Lakshman and Ram, you know, to be away from Sita so that he could kidnap Sita, which he successfully did. And Ram found out about this because there was a bird, Jatayu. He was, I think, king of the vultures. Yeah. So he saw when Ravana was trying to, you know, making his getaway with Sita on his chariot there. So he kind of tried to come to her defense. He tried to attack Ravana. But Ravana was very powerful, you know. It's actually described that he was 10-headed. So Sariputta makes the comment here, not saying that he wasn't 10-headed, but his body was endowed with mystic powers or cities, which enabled it to transcend the limitations of ordinary three-dimensional space. So he was very powerful, you know. So he was able to defeat Jatayu, and Jatayu fell to the ground. He cut off one of his wings. And Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman, before Jatayu actually left his body, they appeared on the scene, and Jatayu was able to tell them what happened. So, you know, Ram knew now, okay, this is what I got, you know, this is what I'm up against now. And the child left his body. Lord Ramachandra performed the last funeral rites. So, now another significant point is that Lord Ramachandra, you know, he decided, okay, I have to rescue my wife. You know, I have to rescue my wife from this Rakshasa, Ravana. But, you know, I don't know if it was the idea was even entertained or not, but he did not go back to his kingdom to get his army. You know, one might think, well, you know, I mean, okay, we made that promise, we'd stay out in the forest for 14 years, but this is like, this is something extraordinary, exceptional, so I got to go back and get my army. And no, he didn't, because it was part of that vow. You know, okay, he agreed he would go to the forest for 14 years, so he didn't entertain the idea of going back to the kingdom and getting his army. But, of course, he, you know, he needed assistance, so he made an army of the Vanaras, who were like something like monkeys. They're not exactly monkeys, but, you know, they were living in the forest. And so he kind of made a whole army of them, and he was able to cross over the ocean, you know, between Cape Comorin, I believe it is, and Sri Lanka. You know, there's a spot there. And as Ritakarma was mentioning yesterday, there was one point, you know, in that endeavor that the ocean wasn't cooperating in some way. So Lord Ramachandra glanced upon the ocean. It got really heated up. And then the predominating deity of the ocean came and was ready to cooperate. So anyway, Lord Ramachandra was able to put stones in the ocean that floated, and they were able to cross the ocean in that fashion and basically declare war on Ravana and, you know, all his brothers and his armies and everything. And he was very powerful. You know, Prabhupada mentions that he was of a modern-day materialist. He was like, equipped with he was a high-tech demon, so to speak. He had stolen a Vimana from his brother, who I can't remember if it was Vayu or Kuvera, but it's called Pushpaka Vimana. You know, he had a very powerful, Vimana, and he had a lot of, you know, weapons and things like that. So anyway, and Ram and his army, they were just bows and arrows, sticks and stones, and, you know, but they went. So anyway, so everybody knows, you know, how the story goes. I mean, of course, then there's Hanuman and his role in the whole thing. But, you know, the Rams was victorious. So it's kind of like a real example of how good triumphs over evil. This is perhaps one like a classic example of that. And then after, after Ram conquered Lanka, Sri Lanka, one of Ravana's brothers was a devotee. His name was Vibhishana. And he actually defected from Ravana's camp and came and joined forces with Ram. And when Ram was victorious over Ravana, he became the emperor there. Ram didn't, you know, occupy. He wasn't interested in, like, taking over the country. He just wanted to rescue his wife and you know, punish this Rakshasa. And then after that was accomplished, Vibhishana was installed on the throne. And then it's mentioned, Prabhupada mentions in the lecture that after 14 years, Ram returned to Ayodhya. So I don't know if that means he spent additional time in the forest after he defeated Ravana, or it was 14 years in the forest before that whole thing happened. But anyways, after 14, he fulfilled that promise that he was in the forest for 14 years. After 14 years, he came back. And, you know, Bharat at that time, he had never really assumed the throne. Bharat never really, you know, he wasn't happy about the whole thing. His mother might have been happy, or maybe not, but Bharat definitely wasn't happy about that whole turn of events, and he chose to, you know, he carried on the administration because Ram asked him to do that, but not as the, you know, emperor, not as the king. He just, you know, did it from another type of position. So, of course, when Ram returned, yeah, he was installed on the throne. And so a couple points about that is that, you know, Ram is kind of glorified as the ideal monarch. And so, you know, some significant things about that, like it's he was a benevolent despot. The word despot means absolute ruler and generally has a negative connotation, you know, like somebody who's exploiting. But the word just plainly just means absolute control. So Ram was and monarchs at that time were despots. They had absolute control. But he was benevolent. You know, previously these rulers, like such as Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Purkit, and Lord Ramachandra being the you know, the supreme example, totally benevolent. And they're interested in elevating the upliftment of the subjects, elevating people to higher levels of, you know, spirituality. And that was the case, of course, with Lord Ramachandra. And it was like, you know, to give make an analogy, just like at the time of initiation, the spiritual master, he takes the karma of the disciple. And, you know, the disciple agrees that he's going to follow the instruction of the spirit. So in other words, it's reciprocal. It's not just like one party is doing something and the other part. Party's doing that. It's not like just the citizens are following all these rules and regulations and the emperor is doing nothing. No. They're in a relationship. The emperor is sacrificing. You know, it's a difficult job to be the emperor of a kingdom. You know, he's taking responsibility. Just like a father in a family takes responsibility to bring his children up properly, to educate them and to inspire them by his own example, and then to see that they get, you know, try to help them get properly situated in life. Same thing. But obviously, if you're the emperor, it's on a much bigger scale. So it was like a very big austerity, you know, for somebody to be. It's no small thing, you know. So Lord Ramachandra was like, you know, that's why he's glorified as the ideal monarch, Ram Raj, because he had that mentality. You know, he had that mentality of, I'm going to, you know, educate the citizens as to what is, you know, the real purpose of the human form of life. I'm going to inspire them by my own example. I'm going to show the example of how to live like a, you know, a perfect human being and a dharmic person, fulfilling all the duties of the, you know, the monarch, like that, of the Rajarsh, you know, the king. And then I'll make sure that everybody's properly engaged. Big responsibility. Big responsibility. So that's why, you know, to this day, you still hear about Ram Raj, because the people, they were like inspired by that. You know, wow, what a personality, you know. Here's somebody, great, 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 powerful personality, intelligent, and he's our well-wisher. He's all about trying to help us. That was, you know, that's what the monarchs were, and particularly Lord Ramachandra back in that time. And then once again, that's why to this day, you know, it's referred to as Ram Raj. The ruling of Ram was, you know, the ideal, because he had that quality. So that's all I have to say. So there's a lot to say about Lord Ramachandra. That's all I have to say. And does anybody have any questions about what I said? And then we could take, if somebody has something, some pastime they'd like to share or something else they'd like to bring up, we could do that, because it's a fast and it's 8:30, no breakfast anyway, and so we got time. So anybody have any question about any of the points I made to start off with? Yeah.
We were hearing about the different qualities of Lord Ramachandra and how he was the perfect example in many different ways. So one thing that you mentioned, that his benevolence, like something that I got from that, you didn't mention it, but we usually have a saying, charity begins at home, right? Mm-hmm. But it sounds a little bit, in one sense, like mundane, like materialistic. Because I was thinking about how he himself, being so benevolent, that he sacrificed himself to the point that when he disguised himself going around and he found out that some low-class man was finding fault in Lord Ramachandra's marriage with Sita at the time, that he, when he heard this and he find out, oh, somebody's speaking like this about me, okay, he banished his wife, Mother Sita, which is very painful. And ordinary people cannot understand this. It's like, how is it that Mother Sita has been, you know, sent, vanished? It may appear that it's like, you know, like a husband can do that. But he, again, benevolence, is like he sacrificed himself for the well-being of the entire universe. Detached, renunciation, and for a, you can say, a greater cause for the well-being of
humanity. Well, I mean, it wasn't like he was just thinking like, oh, you know, I don't want to be criticized. No, it's like, you know, he was ideal monarch. He was showing the example of the ideal monarch. So that was part of that. But it's also said that by in doing that, he awarded her service and separation. So in those, like, there's an exoteric and an esoteric. So ordinarily, it can't be understood. But if you for those confidential devotees who can appreciate the esoteric significance of that, he was awarding her service and separation. So it really wasn't a punishment. Superficially, it appeared like it was, but it actually wasn't. Archita, I'd like to say something.
Nice presentation, thank you. Just a schedule change I wanted to mention. This morning it was announced that there would be a Bhagavad Gita class, but because of the festival, the nature of this evening's program, we're going to do another talk about Lord Ramachandra from 6 to 6:30, and then there will be the Arati and Kirtan, and then the feast at 7. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to make that clear. So there's no 7 to 8 Bhagavad Gita class. Now in that time slot, 7 to 8, if devotees would like to chant, and you should, if you read Prabhupada's presentations about Lord Ramachandra, he always said, we fast until evening. Because every year people contact me and ask, why are we doing it in the evening? It's supposed to be noon. Lord Ramachandra appeared at noon. But there are many quotes of Srila Prabhupada saying, on Lord Ramachandra's appearance, that you fast till evening, just like you do for Lord Chaitanya. And the whole day you should hear and chant about Lord Ram. Every time he would say that. Fast till evening. Hear and chant about Lord Ram. So from 7 to 8, if some devotees would like to do kirtan, that's available. 7 to 8, because there's no Gita class from 7 to 8, as usual. Tonight we will do from 6 to 6:30, more Ram Katha, and then kirtan and arti, and then the feast at 7. Hare Krishna.
Don't know who have difficulty reading, I have recorded the entire Ramayana. You can listen to it, or you can listen to part of it, or whatever you want of it, but it's very easy. It has music, it has sound effects, it has various voice characterizations, and it's a lot of fun. Thank you. I hope you'll partake of it.
Okay, yeah. Huh? Question?
Prabhu, I heard, I might be wrong, but also Prabhupada mentioned in some lectures that this pastime of Lord Ramachandra happens in knowing this Chatur Yuga, but in previous yugas. How can we reconcile that statement and what you just said, that happened 2 million years back?
Well, I don't know if I could do a very good job of it, but... Because in this lecture, Prabhupada definitely said 2 million years ago. But here's something that might help a little bit. At one point in the lecture, Prabhupada was telling this story about how, Lord Ramachandra used to go out on tour. So, and when he did, there was this one, Prabhupada referred to Brahmin, said not really Brahmin, but anyway, one devotee, who when Lord Ramachandra was there, he would come for darshan every day. You know, and he wouldn't eat until he had darshan of Lord Ramachandra. Then he would go home and cook or whatever, okay? So when Lord Ramachandra left for 2 weeks or a month or something like that, this person, Brahmin or devotee, wouldn't eat. And this came to the attention of Lakshman. And Lakshman brought it to the attention of Lord Ramachandra that, you know, hey, this devotee of yours, well, he has this vow that he doesn't take his food until he sees you. So you've been away now 2 weeks, so he hasn't eaten, you know. And Lord Ramachandra said, oh, no, that's not necessary. So there was a statue. I'm now, that's the background. Now I'm going to read you what Prabhupada actually, verbatim what Prabhupada said in the lecture. There was a statue of Ramachandra which was being worshipped in the family from Maharaj Ikshvaku. Maharaj Ikshvaku, the son of Manu, happens to be the forefather of the family in which Ramachandra appeared. See, so in other words, this statue of Lord Ramachandra was there in the closet, actually, but Lord Ramachandra hadn't appeared yet. It was already there in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku. It's a forefather. So how do we understand this? Well, I didn't understand it. I rang up Judhakarma, my go-to guy for these kind of things, and to ask him, what do I make of this? And he pointed out that, well, Lord Ramachandra is an eternal personality. There's a Vaikuntha planet, where Lord Ramachandra presides in the Vaikuntha, world like that. And neither one of us was aware of any direct statement to the effect that just like Krishna comes once every day of Lord Brahma, and Lord Chaitanya follows, so that that's directly stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Adi Lila someplace, chapter 4, I believe. So we couldn't think of a direct statement that, mentions about Lord Ramachandra also being like a scheduled incarnation, but that might be the case. And that if that was the case, that would resolve that apparent contradiction. So, because Prabhupada did say 2 million years ago, and you're saying on another occasion, Prabhupada said in the previous Chatur Yuga, so possibly he's a scheduled incarnation. I'm not aware of a direct statement to that effect, but if you heard that, that would reconcile those two things. Does that make any sense? Is that philosophically sound? Makes sense? Okay. Yeah. Anybody else have anything they want to? I need some Ram Kata that they want to. Okay, thank you very much. Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Sunset.
Sunset.
No, sunset.
Whenever it is. Sunset.